Welcome, folks. We are live streaming on X.com, which that's the first time I've ever used those words. Twitter. We're streaming live on YouTube, as they would say in some Spanish-speaking countries. We are thrilled to have you here. This is episode 12 of To the Unknown Pod. I don't know if this is your favorite yet, but a pod that hopefully you enjoy. My name is Jordan Bush. I'm the executive director of TGFB Media. We exist to help Christians understand and use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. I'm joined by the regular cast and crew on Tuesdays, the Island Boys.
Top. What's up?
Go ahead and introduce yourself. Run around the horn.
Oshawa Hawthorne. I'm the founder of Brilliance Labs, a innovation lab that focuses on God's glory among the nations, and we're working with Bitcoin to innovate for kingdom work.
Ryan Finley, founder of Tracker. I build projects with my kids, and yeah, I have six kids, and Bitcoin advocate.
Love it.
Yep. Matt Purvis, pastor and longtime business owner in Hawaii, and invested in and believe in Bitcoin.
Suffering for Jesus out there in Hawaii. Man, how does he do it? It's amazing. Also, friend of Naval. We got to get Naval on the pod. We'll work on that. Yep. Let's see. What do we got going? We should do this like every episode. We have like a book or something up in the background. So today we've got Ryan has Bitcoin Money, one of the finest Bitcoin children's books in existence. This has been, being distributed in all sorts of surprising places to orange pill the masses. Bitcoin Rabbi, shout to Michael, who wrote that. That was right after I got into Bitcoin, that thing came out. So it's been around for a long time. I'm grateful for him. Let's see. Oshawa's rocking Danner, rocking the YB Vibes Capital tank top. That's our Jordan here. You've got Bon Iver represented for Emma forever ago. That's a great album. We've also got the shout to Chester at Ginger Sherpa on Twitter, rocking the very generously TGFB up with a Tron clock over here, not to be confused with a block clock. We're talking Blocktron is what it's called. Blocktron. So go get yourself one of those. Those will be available very soon in the days to come. So shout to Chester, very good friend of the program, friend of TGFB. Again, we've got just a whole bunch of stuff. So, okay, if you're wondering what in the world do we do here, every week, this may surprise you, but we spend time on Twitter. And so what we do is, as Christians, we want to be good stewards. We want to redeem the time. We want to, buy back our time. And so basically what we decided to do is, hey,
spend all our time on Twitter.
No, that's not what we said. We said, hey, let's take the time that we do spend on Twitter and basically take our favorite tweets that helped us as either men or dads or husbands or Bitcoiners or anyone of a number of other things. And let's just kind of talk about them. So we'll bring them up and just raise them. And some of them we'll fly through. Some of them are just funnier, not as big of a deal. And then there's other, usually like two or three that we just kind of key in on for the majority of our time. So before we get there, though, we're going to do this. We've got something to share because as we just talked about kids' books, we have some fantastic news from TGFB. That is the Orange Umbrella book Kickstarter right now. Can you believe this? We have been going for less than 7 days. We have already raised 49% of the $12,500 goal that will allow us to print a number of versions of this book. So this is a kid's book that me and my buddy JD wrote. We were messing around with Midjourney and ended up just saw an image that kind of sparked the idea for a book. And we just, spent about 2 years, if you can believe this, working on the text. The whole thing rhymes. The whole thing is really, well written. And we end up finding an American girl to illustrate it all by hand, no AI involved in that. So this is an American made production. So go support this over here. It's designed to be a great covert orange pilling tool. You can put in the hands of your no coiner friends and family, though. They probably won't even know it's a Bitcoin book. We're very subtle. And it's just a great story in and of its own self, even if you don't care about Bitcoin in the least. So go grab that. We've got a variety of options here. We've got, you've got your coloring book that we did based on the line art. We've got Let's see what else we have. You see this. We've got also running. This is fitting that we have Ryan here. We have opportunity costs running here. And if you can see this, opportunity costs, go add this onto your browsers. Opportunity cost basically shows you anywhere there's a price on any website, it'll show that price denominated in Bitcoin. So you can see we're actually trying to raise at this particular point, 0.12 Bitcoin to fund this project. And then if you go down here, it's actually got a little bit of a bug. I did this before too. Let me see if I can refresh it. But basically it'll show you all the different pledges denominated in sats. So here you go. Boom. These, we've had somebody already get the Gould pack, which is 11 books. We have the biggest one. We only have one person who's funded it so far, is the 21 book option. It's like one of the legacy super premium sewn binding, super nice paper, versions, and then 20 copies to hand out to friends and family. So you can support us over there. We're trying to get, my goal is by the end of the day to get over 50%. So we're at 49. If you're sitting here watching this, go grab yourself and your progeny some good gifts, and help us get this project over the line. Now, with that being said, we're moving on. We're done with the shilling. Okay. We're moving on to our tweets for the week, which is pretty fitting because here we are. First tweet of the week is announcing opportunity cost. Opportunity cost presented by, a pretty forgettable coder, really. I mean, I don't know of anybody who would really, no, I'm just kidding. This is by Ryan. Why don't you tell us who programmed opportunity cost?
Yeah, so the whole idea was Marty Bentz, and he vibe coded kind of like an initial version one, and then he found my oldest son Moses on Nostra of all places, which is pretty awesome. yeah, and anyways, they video chatted and connected, and Moses took on the project and basically built it out, a working version, got the extension into the App Store, got it accepted after a couple of hiccups. But really cool experience for Moses. And, I think it's an awesome, it's a really cool tool, helps Bitcoiners realize the actual cost in Bitcoin of basically everything on the internet. So, yep.
Yeah, part of the reason to use you get segmented out, and you're like, oh, I'm just gonna get this, and then you're sitting there, you're on the fence, and this is one of the things that tries to help you think about in Bitcoin terms what you're gonna do and whether or not it's really worth it to get the thing. Anyway, Oshawa, Matt, you guys want to add anything about opportunity?
Yeah, psychologically, look at that price and think about the thing you're trying to buy, and then times it by your favorite number, 2, 4, 10, whatever you think Bitcoin's going to, and say, would I buy it at that price, and how much do I need that thing?
And I think opportunity cost, if you're not familiar with it, just as a financial principle, is really helpful. So for example, right, this last week, the Switch 2 launched, and I think it's like, $450, $500. Oof. If you want to have the Switch 2. So it'd be interesting. You could see it priced in Bitcoin, and opportunity cost is not just, this is the cost of this thing, but it's the cost of the thing plus the returns you can make on doing something else with it,
right?
Which includes your money. It also includes your time. So this is a big thing. Like, hey, there is a time and place that you might play the Switch 2 with your kids. And someone might choose to invest their money in that, but then they're going to invest their time. And so you got to really decide, like, what could I be doing with my, couple hundred hours over the next year that I might be playing this cool new system, or I might be learning to vibe code, or I might be going deep with Bitcoin, or like reading through my Bible. There's just so many other things that we could be doing. And so opportunity cost, just across the board, is such a helpful principle to use as you think about buying anything or spending your time on anything.
Yep. Agreed. All right. So shout to Moses, shout to Marty. Grateful for you guys. And let's see here. So that's just one thing. Let's get this, keep moving here. Marty Bendis is also announcing a little bit. He kind of just tells the story if you want to. Let's see. This is not sharing. If you want to hear more about the story behind that, then go find, where is this? How do I? This is not wanting to let me share the screen. There we go. All right. So here's Marty telling the story. Go find this tweet. He mentions Moses by name. Go follow at Moses Finley go grab him. It's a great thing. Great thing to support. We love Bitcoiners. We love supporting Bitcoin projects like this one. All right, let's keep moving. Here we go. What else do we have going on? Why is this working? Stop sharing. Of course, when you try to get these things going, it just
does. One of the craziest things with that extension is go check out Zillow or Redfin and just look at properties.
Yeah.
How we're down to like 4 or 5 Bitcoin for a house.
Yep.
In some cities, and just realize that that could shrink down to less than a Bitcoin for that house within 5 years, and it starts really blowing your mind. So
yeah, these chats are definitely oftentimes bunny trail or intentional trail off into real estate because of the connection between Bitcoin goes this way, real estate goes this way.
Mm.
And part of that is just give an illustration that really spelled it out. I shared with my wife, Wealth Squad Chris, I followed for many years on Twitter. He gave an example. You know, I bought a house for $500,000 in Houston or whatever. I think it was Vegas, actually. And, you know, a few years later, it's worth $800. So I made money. So I made my asset went up. Right. And he said, well, depends. You know, it was 50 Bitcoin when I bought it. Now it's 20 Bitcoin.
Oof.
So it's for anyone listening who hasn't thought about it this way, I don't even know if I'm there. I might be 40% of the way there, but flipping the whole thing to say, I mean, mentally, you know, there, like flip the whole thing to say it Bitcoin's real money. The other part is the shadow. And so if you price that investment that he gives an example of in Bitcoin, he lost more than 50% of his value. If you price it in dollars, you're like, yes, I'm up 25% or whatever. So sorry, that's pastor math right there. But you know.
Yeah, stop denominating. Stop thinking in dollars, folks. Start denominating in something that geriatric presidents can't create out of thin air. All right, here we go. So we're gonna spend our big topic for today. Here we are. Adam Livingston had this to say: the death of the American middle class. The Bitcoin Manifesto. Ash, you shared this. This is kind of your idea. Unpack for us. Why does this matter?
So zoom in a little bit. So yeah, I can.
I'm sorry. It's not wanting to show the.
Be a little easier. Yeah, there you go. Okay, let's cut the BS. The American middle class is dead. It's gone. Buried. Cremated. Ashes sold to Fidelity for collateral. The boomers bought homes for 2x income. The zoomers buy iced coffee for 2x minimum wage. The new American dream, 30-year mortgage at 7%, 96-month car loans, 180K, 1.66 BTC student debt for a communications degree, renting a 400-square-foot box you call a studio, financing your dog's vet bill at 28% APR, taking Wellbutrin and Ozempic just to make it work, selling feet pics on OnlyFans to cover your third job's Uber rides. You call it an economy, but really... is a medically supervised debt prison. You work 60 hours a week, pay half to taxes, half to debt, and beg for 3% raises while inflation eats 8%. The food is fake. The money is fake. The jobs are fake. The politics are fake. The news is fake. The culture is fake. The friends are fake. The optimism is fake. The crisis is real. You are renting your existence from the Federal Reserve. The system is functioning exactly as designed to extract every ounce of your productive energy and convert it into corporate share buybacks and banker bonuses. Bitcoin is your life raft. Bitcoin is the monetary rebellion against the American debt cartel, the final protest vote against a parasitic system that turned your labor into clown coupons. You will not, quote, buy Bitcoin someday. You will buy Bitcoin or you will own nothing. Fiat dies, Bitcoin lives, choose.
Oof.
Oh, such a sad baby.
And I thought it was worth reading the whole thing, both because some folks will just hear the audio of this.
Yeah.
And I just felt like it just captures the picture so well, where if you just talk about like the individual paper cuts, it doesn't feel like much. You're like, well, I can handle this little thing, or I have this issue over here. That's kind of expensive. Or I have this health issue here and this like chronic issue. But you add it all up to say this is the sum of the new American normal. And you realize this is a broken system. We're talking like Ethiopia in the 90s. Like, mm-hmm. like we're headed in that direction. It's not pretty. And yeah. And I offering Bitcoin as that escape hatch. I don't know of any other, like, I mean, try to name one, that's available to people. I mean, maybe you can do the Wall Street Bets and find a meme stock and just somehow like win big, or like we were just in Vegas for this Bitcoin conference. I don't know if you guys noticed this. If there's, in our area, we have, on the reservations, there's casinos. And so there'll be big, like freeway signs advertising the casinos. There's always people smiling in those advertisements. Okay, how many smiling people did you guys see in a casino in Vegas? Not a single person smiling.
Yeah, man.
And what was the average age of them?
Every once in a while, you'd see somebody who had just had their little slot machine, like give them a few little digital tokens on their screen, and they would be all smiling for a moment.
But yeah, most of the people I saw were middle age, if not older, and just getting wrecked by, man. Yeah, we could talk about just these digital, like the digital games. I'm like, how do you? I mean, all of these are just such scams. Ugh.
You know, I was chatting with my wife about this yesterday, and she's getting into all this and making it trusting me with taking risks for Bitcoin and things like that. You know, we don't consider it risks necessarily, but flipping that system. And I said, you know, for me as a human element, if you're 20 years old and you're listening to this and you just heard what Ash said, it's like it's not just in your mind. You know what I mean? Now, this is true for everybody, but the people I think of the most are people who are like 20 right now. You know, how does your prospects look in terms of career, in terms of being able to start families? And then as Christians, I hope we're all thinking about, okay, this is actually human life we're talking about. It's not just how much zero if you're stacking up. So if you choose not to start a family or not to get married or not to go into, you know, a productive career, and those all might change soon, you know, too, as far as how does that interact with the future with AI and Bitcoin. But I just want to say I feel for you. If you're 20, you got to make some good decisions right now. And going back to what I said to my wife, I said, my confidence in the fact that this real estate and this whole system has to get seriously corrected has a lot to do with this entire generation is going to say, why are things this way? And the answer is actually not too hard to find. The answer is some of what you just said, and the idea that the generations in the past essentially borrowed from the future, which is us, but especially as you, 20-year-old, they borrowed from the future in order to pay for lavishness and for riches that they now hold. But those are all based on the system continuing as it is. And so imagine this generation starting to come into power and at large, political activism, political just voting even, as well as voice and, you know, all those kind of things. That is one of the many powerful reasons why the system is due for a massive, massive correction back to reality.
Agreed. All right, let's keep moving. So we're not going to have to go far because Adam Livingston just stays tweeting bangers. This guy. So again, apparently Adam, I was not familiar with his work. He's author of The Bitcoin Wizard, author of The Bitcoin Age and The Great Harvest. Man, impressive. He just stays making these really good threads. So here we are with part two of the thread apocalypse here. And of course, this one hates my life and wants to ruin it. Here we go. All right. Ash, part two, lay it on us.
So this is the one about AI?
Correct.
Okay. So is it worth reading through the thread, or you want to just kind of overview it?
I mean, you could just keep it high level if you want to. Like, what do you remember? It's a pretty long.
Yeah. It's too long. So his main point around AI is this. So the reality of productivity expanding exponentially.
Mm.
So I just heard a clip from Joe, the Bitcoin lawyer, and he was on What Bitcoin Did.
Mm.
And
shout out to Joe, friend of the program. Go for it.
There's a lot of like doomers with like economy doomers within Bitcoin. Even some people on this call tend to be pretty pessimistic with the economy. But it's Joe Carlosari. He's making the argument. He's like, well, AI and like Optimus bots, they're gonna 100x, 1000x productivity, and so we will have a growing economy, and then you're gonna have people out of work, and so they're gonna money print to, maybe it's universal general income, kind of things, but it's this idea that you have the multiplication of productivity with AI, and then in that world, everything gets commodified. Everything, right? I mean, goes squirrel just a little bit.
Yep.
So he's making this point. He's like,
this one.
Yeah. So AI is limiting labor, but is also repricing capital itself. Why should anyone hold a fiat bond yielding 2% when AGI can generate 10,000% intellectual yield overnight? The entire risk-free rate paradigm collapses. Duration itself becomes meaningless. So it's just this fast expansion of everything. And this also relates to Jeff Booth's whole idea about how innovation necessarily leads to deflation, right? You have this huge deflationary force. Everything is getting more efficient. Everything is getting better. And that's where our money printing actually hides so much more inflation, is because you have money printing and debasement going one direction. You have technology and increase of efficiency going the opposite direction. And he's arguing essentially that, hey, the AI is going to like exponential this and make it so much more significant and efficient and productive. But we will need something that is still rare and supply capped and cannot just be vibed. Mm. Right. And Bitcoin is that only thing. Bitcoin's the only thing that you can't just vibe code more of it. You can't just get the AI to figure it out for you and do it for you. And so it's the argument of the thread is Bitcoin is designed for the AI age because it's supply capped, because it's not controllable and like multipliable through AI. Then in that world of where there's no scarcity, things that are scarce will be infinitely valuable.
Mm. Now, I wonder, what do you guys think about the idea? I think I tweeted a while back, earn with AI, save with Bitcoin. That doesn't cover the whole spectrum, but there's AI doomerism and then there's AI optimism and maybe there's something in between. And then as Christians, hopefully we think a little differently than others according to the word of God. Marty, just to tie in Marty's program that Moses Finley program there, the opportunity cost.
Yeah,
that's an example, maybe a good example actually, to say, is that a nice example of saying we AI vibe coded up to a point where we said, yes, this is cool. And then you have to bring in a real producer, the term I'm using anyways, to say, how do we know when it's ready? How do we know when it's good? Maybe a biblical way to put it would be, how do we know when it's good for human thriving, human
flourishing? Yeah,
human flourishing, exactly. And that, to me, maybe is at the core of what it looks like to be human and to be made in the image of God in the next era. Is to say, we need to know what's good for people in order to put these massive forces where they belong.
Yeah, this is a big, conversation that, we've been talking, about it on this podcast over and over again. And then other conversations just keeps coming up is, so much of, we've kind of lived for 50 to 100 years of just with free money, easy money, again, not low interest rates necessarily throughout that entire period, but just money that is just made through government dictate. And that has subsidized all kinds of beliefs and understandings of the world that just do not work when that kind of stuff isn't present. And I just think we're going to start to see it, again. Adam like lays out this super, I don't know if he would call it rosy, but like it seems like, oh, it's just going to be so neat and tidy, this thing. And I just think, yeah, man, I just think you've got a lot of room in there for things to get a whole lot nastier. Again, like one of the cool things about Bitcoin is it disincentivizes war. but I just think like so much of the, like it's the fragility, like so much of the AI stuff seems like it's going to be so much more fragile because it's rooted in these data centers. And so those are still bombable. Those are still attackable. Those are still, you know, and so like there's a lot of this where, again, painting it in the, looking at this in the most rosy light, sure, like this looks great, but I still, I don't know, man. We'll see. And again, even if it's not like full on kinetic war, like this is, I mean, you've got potential for, I mean, there people are talking about just the Chinese, you know, making our grid super vulnerable. And like, there's different little attacks that they can do through that. You know, it's difficult to consider going to war with the person who owns most of your debt and who's providing most of your stuff. Like there's just a whole lot of things that are, I don't know, that are pretty tricky. So I don't know if I'm quite as, if I buy into everything he's saying. I'd need more time to kind of chew through it. But
well, can I go ahead, Ryan.
No, I was going to say, yeah, I think I heard just a couple of days ago, I think it was Lynn Alden talking to Safety in their podcast, or in his podcast.
Yeah.
She said something interesting, and it was basically like Xi doesn't have to do anything. And he's done a pretty good job over the last like 20 years of like, they haven't gone to war at all. And he literally just has to sit and watch because we've been doing so much, so much of our destruction in the United States is self-inflicted. For example, we don't make anything,
yeah,
including like things that are really important. So like, we have horrific storms or hurricanes or fires and things like that. And we don't make our own power transformers. And so we literally, like other countries, even our enemies don't have to do anything. We literally, it's going to take 2 decades for us to, catch up on just like the basics. And so, yeah, we're in a really, really rough situation. We're technically not at war right now, but we're in a terrible fiscal situation as if we had just come out of another world war. And, yeah. And it's happened right at like, it's a storm of things all happening at once. And, yeah, it's going to be a rough transition, especially I would throw in the fact that like most people in our culture aren't used to suffering the consequences of their actions. Right.
Bingo.
Like our whole culture, literally from parenting to school, to sports, to everything, even our justice system, it's like, everybody does whatever they possibly can to prevent people from suffering the consequences that they need to suffer. Like, yep. Parents don't discipline their kids. They don't spank their kids. Teachers, like, students don't respect their teachers. They don't obey them the first time. Like, there's no consequences for misbehavior at schools. Like,
because at the same time, the teachers, so the parents don't want to, you know, come down on their kids or like discipline them, whatever. So then they go to school and the teachers can't, the teachers, you know, yeah, say something to their kids, right, and the parents, you know, ticked off at the teachers, and it puts them in a, like, I have family who work in public education, mm-hmm, and like, I just don't even know how they go to work every day. And
yeah,
I mean, you could say similar things for the police. You could say the same things, like any authority.
It all rolls downhill to the police, and then it gets dumped on them. And then they're just like, okay, well, nobody has any fear of the law. And then, yeah, we're supposed to deal with them. And then the justice system, even when they, yeah, catch them breaking the law, the justice system doesn't want to have any actual consequences with teeth.
Yeah.
And so then they get thrown back out in the street. So then nobody wants to be a police officer. What could go wrong?
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing where that's again, part of the not as rosy picture is, again, it's one thing if you're looking at just the technical merits as if this exists in a vacuum, but it's like, no, this all exists within a human society and, right, in a human society that's being ripped apart at the seams and that has no idea what it is. We don't know what men are. We don't know what women are. Again, you can be sympathetic to people who are actually experiencing all these things, but just the reality of like, this is uncharted waters where all of these things are being experienced and discussed on a national level, and it being experienced at international level. It's one of these things where you're going to reach a tipping point where things aren't going to be able to keep operating. We're seeing, yeah, like the crumbling like a little bit, but it's going to get to a point where, you know, the chickens come home to roost. Like you're, yeah, going to reap what you sow.
I'll give you guys an anecdote from my life real quick. So I have a refund that my county owes me for money I spent in my business on employees, you know, something like $8,000. So I turned this in at the end of the year. I got an email that it was received. I've heard nothing from them since. So I should have received this money in like February or something like that, you know? So I reached out like last month and no response. So I'm going to use this as an example, as well as other people I know who, this was a surprise to me. That's why I'm sharing it on here. It was a surprise to me. And now I understand as things begin to get worse, I wouldn't have thought about the government's response in this way, but they are going to start behaving like predators. So these people owe me the money. It's money I already spent. It's not free money or anything like that. And I'm going to have to just harass them until they send me the money. And what they're hoping is we don't send anybody. And I'm not saying this is a direct thing, like they're sitting in their office saying this out loud, but
yeah,
they neglect to send everybody the money. And 1 in 10 forces the issue and gets their money back. And
yes,
I've seen this with valuations on my property. You know, I got like a triple valuation in 1 year. You know, I make a phone call and I say, I don't think this is right. And literally over the phone, they drop it almost all the way back down. So I go, what are they doing? They're harvesting money from the people, because this is the part I didn't quite grok yet. They are desperate, just like the rest of the population is.
Yeah.
So, and I'm going to use one more example, not to take up all the airtime. Friends of mine had a business that they neglected to pay one type of tax. You have an excise tax here in Hawaii, which is, you know, people move here from the mainland and they don't even realize it. They pay all the normal taxes. And so the first couple of years in business, they neglected to pay it. Well, it was easy to catch this because they actually file their taxes honestly, you know, so they could look at the other taxes and say, oh, you didn't file these taxes. And they came after them for everything, penalties, interest, all this stuff. $250,000 or something like that. Here's the kicker. It's from like 15 years ago.
So the interest is insane. Yeah.
Well, and it's all pretend. It's 100% pretend. So as soon as they start challenging it, it's like, okay, now we drop that in half. Okay, now we drop that in half again.
Yeah.
It's a bullying tactic. And that is, I'm bringing these examples up to say, this is what we can also be expecting as things start to go haywire is, you know, yeah, the police won't answer the phone calls. They're busy breaking up a fight at the high school. You won't get your tax refund for like a year and a half. You know, they won't even pay you at all unless you harass them. And they're going to come after you for taxes from like more than a decade ago, which I don't even think it's legal, but that's what they're doing. And point made is when things start going this way, Christians and everybody needs to think about, your government is going to start behaving in a predatory way unless their convictions, in that state or county or city or whatever are totally the opposite.
The other thing that you get part of this is at the same time that that's happening, you have an ever increasing percentage of the population who's working for the federal government. And so as inflation keeps going up, everybody's margins are getting tighter and tighter. And so then you're that much less likely to try to like rock the boat because of what it could mean for you losing your job.
Yep.
And so it's like this, it's this death by 1,000 cuts in 100 different places. We experience it. The other thing is the more people that work for the government, the less people, governments and big corporations, right? So like, if you have like a kid, you're going out to eat. Okay. You could, you know, 50 years ago, you'd go to a business owned by an actual couple who lives in your community. Whereas now you're going to McDonald's or to Chipotle or whatever. And again, these people are just getting minimum wage jobs. They're making like limited amount of money. They have no love for these actual things. They don't care. So like, again, the pride that they would normally take or could take if it was their family business or something like that, they're not going to take that same level of pride. And so the level of service goes down, the level of cleanliness of bathrooms, the level of cleanliness of the restaurant, like all of these things start to decay. And again, it's a gradual thing, but all of this stuff happens and you're going to get to a point. I mean, it's already happened, but it's going to get to a point where people are going to look around and have no recognition of the place relative to what it was when, even again, somebody like us, we're late 30s, early 40s, you know, what we experience, it's going to be night and day, you know, night and day difference.
I think so. Like, just one last little thing.
Do it.
We're at the tipping point for public schools. So, for example, most families can't survive without two incomes. So then you got both parents out of the home. Maybe mom even after 3 months after she gives birth, and so then you have kids that aren't being raised by their parents for the majority of a day. So they're not getting the training and discipline they need. So then again, those discipline issues. And also there's been, in general, in our country, our culture, I'll say there's been, families have moved away from looking to the scriptures or to the Bible for parenting advice and counsel, right? So a lot of people don't want to spank, right? The culture said that was abuse. People just said, okay, then we'll invent new ways to raise kids after thousands of years, and we'll just do things different and hope for the best. Well, all that to say, the parents aren't parenting, they're not disciplining, and then the kids end up in public school, and guess what happens? They're monsters. And I don't want to say all, but I'll say enough that you completely destroy the learning environment for the other kids. So then you create this environment where the wealthy families pull their kids out of those public schools and put them in private schools, charter schools, homeschool. And then basically the students that are left have, which is a large number, and I'm not going to say, I don't want to say generalize all of them, but there's enormous, and I know for a fact, my mom was a public school, my sister's a teacher, brother-in-law is a teacher. I have lots of friends that are public school teachers. The behavior issues right now in 2025 are worse than ever before.
Yeah.
There's a debt spiral going on in public schools right now because of the amount of supportive staff that they're having to make it so that it's even possible to continue.
Yeah.
Like the behavior issues are so out of control. And there's not enough money. So then all of a sudden they're spending $20,000-$25,000 per student because you keep it. Increasing staffing costs, supportive staffing costs, administrative costs. The whole system's going to blow up here. And now you throw in AI and the fact that like that whole aspect of it for and the implications on education and like, dude, again, I'm an optimistic person, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, that whole system looks like it's about to implode.
Yeah, some random nim shared this on Twitter. Let's find out here. Yeah, a consequence of broken money and poor eschatology. So the furniture my grandparents left me versus the furniture I'm leaving my grandkids. It's like, oh, super depressing. Shout out to IKEA at the same time. Yeah, we're it's a bummer. Again, we can be grateful. All these things, we should still be grateful for these things. But it is, again, this is like degradation of... You know, devaluation of people, devaluation of labor, skill, all these kind of things you're seeing in real time, or prioritization of certain things over against other things. It's depressing.
Yeah. Well, the whole back to the opportunity cost, like, and once you start thinking about when you lower your time preference, you buy things that, oh, this would be great for my great grandkids to one day have, like, that you completely changes your mindset on how you view everything. Like you don't want to buy things that are just you're going to throw away in the dump within a year because it wears out. So it like changes you, like you're no longer buying furniture at Walmart.
Yeah.
You want to buy, you know, something that's going to last for decades at a minimum.
Yeah. So make it.
Yeah.
Yep.
From a local craftsman.
Yeah. Yep. All right. We continue. Here we go. We have Ray Dalio, another encouraging one, man. This is just quite the curt episode. All the sunshine, all the rainbows here, folks. Let's try this. Civil War.
It went from a changing world order to take out the changing world and just say civil war.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And like, I mean, let's be clear here. Like, again, this might be. Especially if you're a Christian watching this, you're like, oh man, this is doom and gloom. Like we are not people who are sitting here just acting like, you know, this is going to be horrible. What's going to happen to the world? None of that. At the same time, it's chickens come home to roost. You reap what you sow.
Yeah.
And we've been kicking the can along down the road for decades. And so eventually these chickens are going to come home to roost. So Ash, Civil War, what impacted you about this?
No, this wasn't mine. I haven't read it actually. So
that was mine. That was mine.
Oh, and not the encourager. You know, here we go.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to like vibe this one because this is extremely long. But
okay.
But some, you know, Ray is not he's very clear, although I wish it was like half the length.
Yeah, this is look at this. Oh my gosh.
Is that even an article? Are they doing books now on X? What's going on?
It's a full on book X. It should be like a, you know, publishing button.
He's not talking only about physical violence, civil war. He is talking about a lot of the things that you already mentioned about the essentially no middle class in any practical sense. You know, it's like the middle class hollowed out. And it gets to a point, he has like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think he has 6 stages in like civil breakdown. Do not ask me what they are. Like I said, I'm vibing it right now, but he's talking about what it takes to get to like stage 5 and 6, but a lot of it does have to do with the lower income strata kind of realizing what's going on, reacting to that, and essentially at some point demanding that change is made. And if the demands aren't met, that's when potential violence starts happening. You know, I'd have to kind of see, it's been a few days since I read that. I have to kind of see some of the highlights there, but
I shared a Grok summary. If you just scroll down, and Nolan said, "Hey Grok, summarize it in 5 points.
Where'd you put it?
I put it in our studio chat.
What a good idea. Look at this use of AI
here. I'll share that since this is my responsibility here to, what you call it. To vibe it. Okay, so
go
ahead.
Yeah. I'll just plug another book. The Fourth Turning is a really good book that kind of describes a lot of what Dalio talks about. I think we're basically going through one. That's going to be kind of a crazy.
So here, this is worthy of reading. I'll read this out loud. The U.S., number one, this is a Grok summary. The U.S. is in stage 5 of internal order cycle. That's 5 of 6, folks. With bad finances and conflict risking stage 6 civil war. Wealth gaps, high debt, economic shocks fuel the societal tensions. The governments face constraints, therefore they raise taxes or cut spending. Also risking unrest or inflation. You might know that a lot of our spending is on entitlements or support or whatever you want to call that. Populism, extremism, and a loss of truth in discourse increase conflict risks. Now, without bunny trailing, I think a lot of what we're seeing in LA right now, I'm shocked at when it goes to the loss of truth. I'm shocked at the level of, it's not just the rioters themselves. I'm seeing stuff in like the Mexican Senate, and these guys are showing little maps like, well, it all used to belong to Mexico before anyways. And I'm like, okay. And I'm not going to say the president of Mexico said that. That was the Senate. But the president was saying some fairly stuff that I thought was a bit crazy herself. Hey, you can't do this. You can't, you know, put constraints on money that's sent back into Mexico. And in context, this is like, that was the part that shocked me, is that people in leadership positions were implicitly or explicitly supporting the kind of violence and rioting that was taking place. That's number four. Number five, civil war could emerge if disagreement systems fail. I don't really know what that means. Potentially with foreign involvement. A point I'll vibe on that is he's pointing out that not all of this is even internal. This is also external, with some of the TikTok as well as all the other social media being influenced by our outside political and national opponents who would love to see us in more chaos. I feel like I have a little chamber of optimism. Or at least a little philosophy point here, which is that, you know, let's say China and Russia, you've got president for life type people, right? And other countries, but those are our two big dogs. I think we're always facing in the U.S. System the challenge of, we can't have like a 20-year plan, right? We can't have a 50-year plan. By the nature of our system, it's getting turned over whenever the voters decide that there's a different regime. So if you want to say one point for the autocracies, you know, they get to say, well, I'm president for life. Let's do this for 5 years, and then that'll go into the next stage for another 5 years, and then we'll do all. They get to make very long-term plans, because unless someone kills them, they're not going to get out of their position.
Yeah.
We have the negative side of the it flip-flops all the time. But I think we have a corresponding positive side that, in my view, outweighs these autocracies and is the reasons why people are still all trying to move to the U.S. And it is that freedom, innovation, you know, flexibility to the will of the people. It doesn't look great in times like this, but in my view, it's closer to God's ways. It's not, we're very far from the thing, right? The God's vision, but we are closer, and therefore blessings come from that, which do not extend to the autocratic countries.
Yeah. I still think though, I mean, like Bukele is an example of this. Like Bukele is an example of exactly the best. So like one of the things that when I talk to people about this dynamic, it's like, okay, so democracies or like republics have a higher floor, but a lower ceiling. Okay. Like there's a higher floor for what they're going to be, but then there's a lower ceiling. They can't quite, whereas with what you see with Bukele, like obviously he could use his powers for evil, but he is able, things were so corrupt, so bad that it's actually the best possible thing that could have happened is to have a moral person come in there and literally just be like, we're cleaning house. Like we're not playing games. Like this is there's so much corruption that hides in bureaucracy, that hides in laws. And so like it really is this thing where it's a periodic like reset that you really do need. And so again, somebody like, I mean, a lot of this stuff, yeah, if you think about just like the razor's edge that, you know, that the United States was on, like you could have had a government just totally supporting everything that is going on in LA and everything that's going, like, it's just wild to think about the kind of the.
Well, I mean, you have the whole media supporting it.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, the media. And then you have the local, I mean, it's the whole thing's politicized, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so this is, at least to me, it appears like it's another attempt to try to score a lot of political points. Because otherwise, why do you let just chaos reign like that if you're not trying to like allow it to fester and then blame it on your political opponent? Because I mean, otherwise you're just like, that's just you're shooting yourself in the foot. Well, why would you allow that destruction to happen in your city? Like,
because again, then people are going to cry out for more government intervention, and then they get more power and they get more money and like all this.
Well, it leads to more extremism, yep. Right? I mean, it leads to more extreme leaders, right? Because you have to have stronger and stronger leaders to try to overpower the chaos.
Yep.
And so it actually brings about the very thing that a lot of people say that they're against.
Yeah.
So if you don't like Trump, then don't sow like anarchy. Yeah. Right.
But the fascinating thing is, like, again, what you just said is you start to get people who they want something or they don't want something until it's their guy in power. Then they absolutely want it. And so it's this whipsaw back and forth of like, what do you want? And you only have to wait a few minutes to see yourself wanting the exact opposite of what you wanted before. And so this is one example of this. I found this awesome tweet. Shout to Derek Rishmawi, one of the hosts of Mere Fidelity podcast. This is a little spicy for Derek, a little spicy for the PCA guys. But he had this. So Katy Perry shared this tweet. Los Angeles, a place that literally began as El Pueblo de Nuestra Señora de Reina de Los Ángeles de la Porcinicula, founded by Mexican settlers in 1781. This was once Mexican land, and the people being targeted today are often descendants of those who've lived here for generations or came seeking safety, work, and dignity. And Derek, Katy Perry coming out strong for the Spanish conquest is a true leftist song too. Amazing stuff. It's like, yeah, now we're actually rooting for the conquistadors. We're rooting for the colonizers is now like the left wing, the left thing that's acceptable.
Well, and in case anyone out there didn't make the connection, you know, there's a connection there, which is that the previous system and the direction we were going is actually very much like those autocratic states.
Yep.
So it's moving in the direction of, whether you realize it or not, what's going on in Russia, what's going on in China, by philosophical like beliefs. You know, you're moving in that direction. And so moving away from that direction back to, as far as possible, back to the freedom and especially the principles that of God is where we want to go.
And it's going to be very difficult to do? Because how do you change a very broken system from within the system, and at the same time, like, have millions of people realize that the entire system is completely, like, they're completely hosed.
Mm.
And literally, like, of course the media is going to be like, look, this was all Trump's fault. Like,
yeah.
5 decades of monetary debasement and completely destroying the money and breaking everything. Look, it was the orange man's fault. Get him. You know, and this is like, and we're seeing it, right?
Yeah.
Like, people like don't understand what's going on at all. And they're going to be very, very gullible when it comes to like, oh, who should we blame? Tell us who we should blame.
So this,
and
I'm sorry, Brian, go ahead.
No, I just think this, like what we're seeing right now, like, yeah, it's going to be, I would say it's going to be this or worse for the next 20 years.
So Ray points out here on this part I highlighted that the democratic system also breaks down when you're going from stage 5 to stage 6, which means that, yes, the votes may, let's just assume the votes are counted properly, which we can't even assume that anymore. But if you did, the population decides what to do, he says. But the problem with one person, one vote begins where leaders are basically selected via popularity contests by people who are largely not doing the sort of thoughtful review of capabilities that most organizations would do when trying to find the one person for an important job. And he says, therefore, the even democracy breaks down. And shout out to the Gospel of Jesus Christ, let him preach, man. Let him preach. Now I forgot what the gospel is. Shout out to the gospel that, in contrast to cult life, in contrast to raw politics, the gospel is being spread by convincing others of the truth by our words and by ideas. And I would even say that certain Christian denominations, especially throughout history, but even now, focus on raw power and belonging and belonging to institution, belonging to certain traditions in a way that is not true of the gospel. And so what in my view, what is it that pulls us out of this political problem that's similar to? We have to be able to convince our neighbors to care about rule of law and about the truth and things like that. And it's not just by your side getting all the power and winning. It's about convincing, which hopefully things like this podcast and others are part of that mission.
So just throwing in a little current events. I don't know if you guys have followed any of the Southern Baptist Convention. So I don't think any of us are Southern Baptists here or members of Southern Baptist churches. But it matters because it's the largest Protestant denomination in the country. Mm-hmm. So they just had a vote on whether to disband the ERLC.
Evangelical Liberty Commission or something like that?
Yeah, so it's essentially... Russ Moore led it. It was going back to the 70s and 80s, it was the Christian right. It was the idea of how do Christians influence political policies and speak truth to power and all that kind of stuff. But there's almost a majority of people, so a very strong minority, feel like it's entirely lost its way. And under Russ Moore's leadership, has actually just become a megaphone for the progressive arm of the church and of the political arena, and they want those wanted to scrap it and start building from the beginning of first principles. What does it mean as Christians to engage in the political discourse?
It's just that they're not representing the Southern Baptists well. Like, they're not representing what they're actually saying they're going to do. So I think they ended up, the motion to disband it didn't actually pass. It was like 52-46 or something like that. But yeah, I've got friends who were on the floor trying to make that happen. Actually, shout out to Pastor Chase Davis, mm-hmm. is going to be on this podcast next week, talking about an article that he recently wrote. He was on there putting forward a motion. Actually, his was a different motion. Josh Abatoy is a friend. He was also there trying to push that forward. William Wolf, but bunch of good dudes who are down there, just trying to help the, you know, the leadership of some of these groups that are getting lots of funding, that are sitting on Capitol Hill, that are being, you know, at least theoretically involved in making policy and representing the largest Protestant denomination in the United States. You know, again, by reliable account, they're not doing that. Like, they're not actually getting in the room. And then even they're not even leveraging, like, there's a story that, like, they weren't pushing, like, for example, the abortion's a big issue in the evangelical world, humongous issue within Southern Baptist convention. And so this is something where, like, they weren't even pressing on that issue for some reason in a number of state bills that were getting passed. So, big deal. A lot of stuff going on. We could talk a lot more about that. Let's keep marching here. We got Ryan there. That's the furniture one. Let's see here. We got that one. Okay, here we go. I think this might have been mine. Let's share.
Guys, get your positivity loaded up. We're already at 55
right.
minutes.
Let's get back to some, like, Bitcoin fixes this. Here we go. Tell me if you can hear this. This should work. I believe it's Dart and Kita.
I think that this business is, like, one of the most powerful ideas in crypto. To actually go back to the whole, like, thing about alts and long durations, like, I think crypto is here to stay. And I think that for so much of the world, if you live in, some people think America, but if you live in Argentina or Nigeria or Turkey, like, you don't buy life insurance because you're going to live longer than the Argentinian peso. So these insurance policies, like, high net worth individuals use insurance to actually wrap LP commitments, to, like, cover estate tax burdens, like, you put them in tried trusts. Like, we help people do all this stuff just in Bitcoin, you know, for the type of, like, long-term store of value and inflation hedge that you talked about. I think that this business is like one of the most powerful.
Come on, there we go. So, I mean, just looking at, so again, with everything else changing and with the currency collapsing, one other thing that you have to think about now differently, you have to adjust how you think about it, is life insurance and is insurance more broadly. Because again, if you start planning out, like, the economics of insurance stop making sense in the same way if you're denominating them in a, you know, devaluating, in a devaluing currency. And so just thinking about this issue. And again, I don't know anything about the specific company. Meanwhile, Bitcoin Life Insurance sounds cool. But again, this is not an approval of them, but just this issue of, yeah, hey, guess what? Insurance is just another one of these things you have to think about. You have to think about differently. You have to plan differently just because of the nature of things. I'll also do a shout, Rob Hamilton, shout to, Anchor Watch, Bitcoin Insurance. Rob's a friend, and their company recently launched, the only insurance company that has coverage from Lloyd's of London, like the gold standard, Bitcoin standard of insurance globally. They are, again, they're offering products both to individuals and to just, like, companies, humongous. I think the $100 million is, like, their upper limit. Not a sponsored thing. I have nothing to do with them monetarily, but this space of Bitcoin and insurance is going to be one that just continues to explode in my opinion, based on, you know, if the world keeps getting Bitcoinized.
So, I don't know if we have another specific thing we're moving towards, but when thinking about positivity, again, I still have that 20-year-old in my mind, everybody out there, but I'm especially thinking about this generation coming up, you know, what is the positive thing for a person coming into this? I mean, well, let's just say, what is the positive advice or encouragement that can be offered to somebody who's realizing this for the first time? I mean, it's amazing that Michael Saylor says, oh, he started realizing Bitcoin in, like, 2020. That's only 5 years ago, you know? So it doesn't matter what age you are. He was 55. And so it's not just that, but the ones who are probably facing the most discouragement, maybe those entering into family, the time to get a family, the time to get a career, the time to push forward in investing. I see, just to throw something out there and shout out Ryan Finley and Moses Finley and Marty Bent. There's a paradigm right there, you know, actually make things, that are good for the world and partner with people who, believe it or not, you may have heard differently in public school, many of those people do want to help and do want to see people succeed, and they do want to see the world be a better place. You guys could totally move on from what I said, but do you have any thoughts on the positive encouragement for people who are coming to this realization, but it's not all doom and gloom?
Yeah. I'll just keep going with that, like what I'm actually encouraging Moses with right now. So as he's hitting his stride, you know, into his professional life, like his career, basically, he's saving in Bitcoin, and the housing market's the most unaffordable time in history. So he's not buying a house right now. He's not buying real estate. He's saving in Bitcoin. And I'm encouraging him, like, just with seeing the market turn right now. I wanted to get a house back in, you know, the years leading up to 08, and I couldn't. It was very, very unaffordable back then. But the message is, find the hardest money that you possibly can and save in it. Like, spend less than you earn. Earn as much as you can. Be wise, like put off, you know, delay your gratification. The real estate market's going to drop. Like, there's going to be a big correction. Real estate will get more affordable. It always does. Like, these, you know, when it hits these extremely unaffordable times. So the point is like, look out into the future, read Bitcoin Money, read all these other, read Thank God for Bitcoin, read The Gospel According to Bitcoin. Like, go deep and understand how broken our money is and the problems that Bitcoin is solving, and then start saving in it. And yeah, like, I think in 5 years, Bitcoin will probably be, my guess is, up 10x, real estate down. It'll be really, really easy for someone who's been saving over the next 5 years to peel off a little bit and get into a house.
Yeah.
It's not that complicated. Like, that's one of the beautiful things about Bitcoin. It's very, very simple. You don't have to, you just need to understand some basic concepts.
When are you kicking him out of the house?
So, yeah. You answer that question, and then I want to comment.
That's a loaded question.
Yeah.
Well,
Go
ahead.
No, I was just gonna say they're ready. They're moving out. They're gonna be renting a house here soon. So, yeah, I'm excited for him and his next brother down.
Shout out to Elijah. Let's go.
I want to move on to you too, but just keep in the back of our mind, that's the saving part. Where's the earning part for people coming into this season too? But you can bump that.
Can I add, I just want to throw one more thing in there. Even the project that Moses did for Marty, Marty wrote a whole big post about it and emailed it out to all his newsletters. Subscribe to that if you're not subscribed. But he said that it was AI and vibe coding that caused him to produce the prototype that led to the product itself. Yep. So it was like, you know, software development's really expensive. It's very time consuming. Yep. You need a lot of expertise. And 5 years ago or 10 years ago, you would have been like, this, I don't have 50 or 100 grand to have this whole thing. Yep. Like, cause that's an order of magnitude more like higher risk, and you know, things are risky and they don't always pay off.
Yeah.
But you get a proof of concept where you actually can literally see the product. You're like, oh man, that would be incredible if this was actually working.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally.
So it's producing. Oh yeah. It's producing. There's going to be a lot of work for software developers. That's a whole other topic around that. But I want to plug one more thing. Blue collar work.
Yep.
Anything in the trades.
Yes.
Anything related to anything physical.
Correct.
Plumbing, electrical, HVAC, like appliance repair, like all the construction stuff. Dude, if you're willing to work hard and you're set, you're absolutely set. And they're very high paying jobs. And the reality is like, people are still going to want to survive in the future.
Yeah.
And all those blue collar trades are directly linked to survival. We don't have to overcomplicate it. Like, will there still be framers in the future? Like, dude, people are going to live in houses in the future, and they're going to, the houses are all being destroyed by the weather. So they're always going to need more maintenance.
Ryan, the Tesla droids are all going to take over the construction jobs.
I'm not worried.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe in 30 years.
Yeah.
I could see construction itself completely changing, maybe, but so it's going to be a lot. Yeah.
Matt, I'll answer your question from a different angle, from a father's perspective, to my message to the dad whose son is failing to launch. Okay, I recently had a conversation with a dad who has a son who's a college graduate and has since then and majored in a topic that let's just say
I already like it.
He enjoyed, but may or may not offer. Like it's kind of one in a thousand where you could make it in this industry, actually make money. And so he graduated from college and has returned home. He does not have his driver's license, does not want to get his driver's license, and really spends a lot of time on his computer and in games and his, and this dad was sharing the wins for him is that he's learning to pick up after himself with his laundry and make his own food and do his own dishes.
Jordan Peterson.
So he's like, okay, this is what we're working on. And so I had this conversation with him, and he's a Christian dad, but clearly he made some decisions early on and set some trajectories that has set his son up to be not ready to launch and provide for himself, right? No job, no license, all this. And he gets his gifts from his wealthy grandparents, and he just saves the cash. And so he still has a bunch of money, but it's just spending money because he doesn't have to pay for any of his needs. And so I shared two principles with him. So first, this is from Galatians 6. In chapter 2, it says, bear one another's burdens. Chapter 6, verse 2. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. For each will have to bear his own load. Okay? So here you have this principle, this call to bear one another's burdens and fulfill the law of Christ, which is the law of love, right? But also, hey, don't think too highly of yourself and bear your own load. Right? You're responsible for yourself, and your own boasting is in your own work. Don't boast in someone else's work. Don't rely on someone else's work. And so we need the discernment as parents and as young people, right? To know, hey, this is a burden. And as a parent, I need to help my launching child with this burden, right? Maybe it's buying that first house when the market's better. Maybe it's helping with education and trade school, right? Maybe it's arranging their marriage and getting them around some other good Christian young people their age. I'm only half joking about the arranging their marriage part. But then you also have the discernment to see what is their load that they need to carry. And I'm currently taking from them and spoon feeding them. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing that, to your adult son, you are sinning against your son. You need to repent to your son, apologize, and then start new, right?
Clip that.
So I shared that Galatians 6 principle. And then the application to my friend was, I said, hey, there's 31 chapters in the book of Proverbs. Read one chapter a day for the next month and just highlight and take notes on what a fool looks like and what a wise man looks like, and what a father says to his son so that he becomes wise. And then if you see that you're being foolish, repent to your son. If you see your son being foolish, 100%. Challenge him. And where you see you're not parenting well, in a way to incentivize work, like one of the Proverbs says, right? It's hunger that drives on the laborer. Right? In the New Testament, Paul says it, work doesn't eat, right? Yep. Hunger is actually a gift of God to make you get up and do something. Mm-hmm. So that's my message to dads that are processing through this. And by the time your son is a college graduate and moved back in, it's not too late, but you could have started so much earlier.
I want to add one thing. There is an enormous lie in our culture that basically says that you shouldn't burden your kids with work, like until they let them experience like adult life, you know, after the high school. And it's like, it's such a lie. Like kids need to embrace.
It's so
stupid. they need to embrace, first of all, like they need to embrace responsibility as early as possible, because that's they're going to flourish. Like, being able to take care of themselves, and they'll never be able to take care of a wife or kids or a family if they can't first take care of themselves. So the earlier that can happen, the better. And secondly, all the other things that come along with embracing responsibility, like literally confidence in that you can solve problems and that you can build things and make things, like kids should be working as early as possible.
Yep, yeah.
Like it, and like the again, I'm not completely against sports and, you know, all the extracurricular activities, but like, holy smokes, like, dude, 99.9%, they're not going to make it anywhere in any of those things. It's at the end of the day, it's not activities that are going to be going to encourage flourishing.
Yeah.
When it really matters,
and you'll get people who will be like, and again, because this is, I mean, you can get people who are like, oh, well, you just learn so many things in sports. It's like, yeah, you know where else you could learn all those same things? Work. Like, you can learn a lot of those same things if you're working, like, especially if you're doing physical labor, you're actually working. Yeah. And on top of that, you're learning to like problem solve with difficult to work with people. You're learning to manage money because you're making money. And again, then you can be contributing to not only the needs of yourself, but also your household and potentially future household. Yeah. Like all of these things, it's not like, oh, we just hate sports. It's like, no, you're delaying adolescence in a very real way, in ways that just are not helpful and are not serving. At the same time, like, I do think just like everything else, context matters. And so like in Uruguay, one of the things that happened was like they're, you know, 30 years farther down the road in terms of currency devaluation and lots of stuff like that. And it's totally normal for people to live with their parents until they're like in their 30s. And so it because like you can't, like real estate is just priced way far out of reach. And so like there has to be some sort of context recognition. But yes, if you're just sitting home doing nothing, then like, yeah, that's that's one of these things. Yeah. Where you're looking at, what does it mean to be human? It means to think about and provide for the needs of other people other than yourself. Like this is part and parcel of what it means to be human. And so again, children are dependent on their parents to a degree, but like there comes a point where, you know, where like you are formed into a man or woman, and there ought to be, again, the actual mechanics of and like end product result of, you know, there can be degrees to what that actually looks like, but it should be, you know, a drive and a desire for self-sufficiency in a working in these things.
Yeah.
Paul said,
and all those lessons.
I think it's Acts 20. Paul says even, and this is his farewell to to the Ephesians. His farewell to the Ephesians. He spent like 18 months or something. Mm. And he tells them, you remember how both me and everyone with me never ate any bread without paying for it. And we provided for ourselves through this whole, through the entire stay here. And it's an example for you guys that we were really serving the Lord rather than serving our own needs. And if you break that down, what does that look like? That's small business, y'all. That's Paul tent making. You got Titus, I think, came there. You know, Titus, you got Timothy, you got everyone who came with him was essentially doing business together in some way or another, in order to provide for their needs and setting an example for them. And so I feel like Osh's awesome message to fathers, as you guys kept speaking, I'm like, there's a message like that to patrons, you know, to those people who are on the upper end as things bifurcate. There's a message like that to the young people as well. And I got a couple more positivity injections, but I want to give my Ryan, go ahead.
You know, I was going to say, I lost my train of thought.
It's that meme, right? The bus is going somewhere and then Matt comes, the train smashes him.
Well, it was something to do with the, we're talking about parenting.
So,
no, it was the lessons, huge, huge life lessons. Like as we're talking about investing and things like that, spending less than you make. Oh, when would be the best time for a person to learn that be? At home, when they're learning lessons from their parents.
Yep.
Like, why would you want them to learn such a super important lesson until after they get out of high school and they move away?
Yep.
I think there's a lot of parents that are like saving that. And then guess what? The kids didn't learn that because they didn't do that for the first 18 years. Also just work ethic, like learning how to solve problems, learning how to persist, learning how to persevere. There's an enormous amount of training, revolving around work that it would be beneficial for a kid to get when they're young and not save it until they're later. And then at the same time, as our currency is getting destroyed, kids that are making a lot of money and they're able to save it because their expenses aren't very much, like, what an incredible opportunity that young kids have to save. And like when they get married and they have a family, they have this huge nest egg because they've been saving for 5 or 10 years. Dude, a very entrepreneurial young kid could have a lot of resources.
Literally have $100,000 a year. I mean, like $100,000 by the time they graduate high school easily. Like easily. Like, I mean, again, even if you don't have a mother-in-law like I do, who is way too generous with paying your kids, like paying them $20 an hour to mow lawns. Like, listen, you could, especially my kids have no excuse. Like if you.
Good. So now I think we don't have time for this, but we'll do a teaser for another future episode is the very not controversial topic of how should you raise your sons differently than your daughters? Mm-hmm. And is my view about putting that load on my son is that should I treat my daughters differently? I think so. But how that gets worked out is, I think, will be an interesting topic for discussion.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. It's different for sure.
So, Cody Anderson, shout out to Cody. Cody's out in, up in the great Northwest as well. Basically, he says here, a wise man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Isn't just spiritual or money. Character carries forward. Definitely true. Good to see you, bro. All right, we've been going for a while here. It's time for me to go rescue my wife and help my kids. So, Ash, yep. Matt, Ryan, appreciate you. Man, number episode 12 in the books. Appreciate you guys, all of you who are watching, who have watched. Again, we'll see you on the next episode. We'll close this just by, again, reminding you right now, here we have Orange Umbrella Book. We are almost at 50%. The cost of producing this book has gone down, 1/100th of a Bitcoin during the time that we were on this call. I don't know how that happened. It went from 0.12 BTC to 0.11. Just things keep getting cheaper. Fantastic. Would love to get over this 50% thing by the end of the night. So if one of you guys wants to stop sitting on dirty fiat and wants to get rid of it and help us produce this book, that'd be fantastic. If you don't, you love ETH. That's what I'm going to say. I can't prove that, but I think that's true.
Hey, Jordan, can I show one other crowdfunding project that we're working on?
Please, please.
So, of course, this is our Orange Pill, the Church, Reach the World, Geyser campaign. See, we're real Bitcoiners. We don't use this fiat Kickstarter stuff. Might as well be Ethereum. This is a Bitcoin-based crowdfunding.
Wow. Goodness gracious.
And we have so far raised, we have two different goals, but we've raised over 1 million sats. And I'm not even running opportunity costs because we're denying it. But help us reach our goal of 5 million Satoshis to give as matching grants to churches and ministries that are starting to use Bitcoin. And Jordan's actually a part of this. So... I'm just giving him a hard time.
Listen, which one of us is going to rebuke Matt for showing his casting his wares before the world? You know, not giving anonymously over here. He's got his reward apparently. Congrats, Matt. No, I'm just kidding. Matt
McGee. Shout out to Matt McGee. He gave $150. Thank you, Matt. We love you, brother.
Look at all these Christians donating
$5.
Asua. Also getting his reward. All right, congrats, Ash.
You got to test the thing. You get it up. You got to do some tests. Okay.
I know. Oh my gosh. There's
some other.
Apparently, Ash needs to be discipled a little bit more. But yeah,
but many
parentheses. Reward on earth, Ash.
But yes, I'm very impressed by how Christian our givers are here. You know, not wanting to be known. Not wanting to receive glory from man. We can't say the same of Ash and Matt, but hopefully someday we will be able to.
Okay, so it's geyser.fund, and you can find us. This is Bitcoin for God at geyser.fund is the lightning address, or just find the Orange Pill, the Church, Reach the World. campaign. So there you go. Thanks for letting me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, we are grateful for Brilliance Labs. We're grateful for Magnalia. We will be back on, tomorrow. I forgot it's not 2 days from now. It's usually 2 days. We'll be back tomorrow with another live streamed episode. This time, not with the Island Boys, but with the Mountain Presbys. They will be returning. Jim McAndrew, Tim Fox will be returning. We will be talking about all kinds of things. We are grateful for you guys. Join us tomorrow back on the interwebs, Twitter, YouTube. Get live in the comments, but tweet like your mama was watching, or leave comments like your mama was watching. We don't want to get too wild up in these tweets. So yeah, grateful for you all. We'll talk to you tomorrow on another episode of To the Unknown Pod.
See you guys.